Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha. Always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Jackson Hewitt.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper in Chicago. A temporary ruling from the U.S. Supreme Court regarding the abortion drug mifepristone. The stay comes hours after the Biden administration and the drug's maker asked the justices to intervene. CBS's Michael George reports.
The Supreme Court says it's temporarily keeping in place federal rules for use of an abortion drug. The court asked both sides to weigh in by next week on whether a lower court ruling that added restrictions to mifepristone should take effect. On Wednesday, a federal appeals court weighed in on a ruling from a conservative judge overriding the FDA's approval of the pill. In a 2-1 vote, the appeals panel said the drug could still stay available, but imposed restrictions, including blocking mail delivery of the drug.
In a closed-door ceremony, Florida Republican Governor Ron DeSantis signs a bill to ban abortions after 6 weeks of pregnancy. Abortion rights protesters raise their voices.
Stand up right now! Stand up right now!
Meantime, Kansas Governor Laura Kelly, a Democrat, has vetoed a bill that could have penalized doctors accused of not providing enough care to infants delivered alive during certain kind of abortion procedures. The Massachusetts Air National Guardsman charged in connection with the leaking of classified intelligence documents appears in court but does not enter a plea. 21-year-old Jack Texera was returned to detention pending his next appearance next week. CBS's Catherine Herridge with more.
Former Secretary of Defense Mark Esper said internal security systems failed.
You can't think of a good reason for a 21-year-old to have access to this information.
No, I cannot think of a compelling reason, and I assume Secretary Austin and Chairman of the Joint Chiefs Milley are probably asking those same questions.
Around 24 people connected with a powerful Mexican drug cartel, including Joaquin El Chapo Guzman's sons, have been indicted on charges of taking part in trafficking fentanyl. The defendants include citizens of China and Guatemala, accused of supplying chemicals required to make the drug. U.S. Attorney General Merrick Garland.
The 23 defendants we have charged in this indictment represent each stage of the movement, manufacturing, and sale of deadly fentanyl from start to finish.
Brush fires in Rockland County, north of New York City, prompt evacuations of 100 homes and caused damage to several of them. WCBS-TV's Nick Calloway on the cause.
Officials here tell me it was a CSX freight train that had its wheels locked up, sending sparks into nearby brush and starting dozens of fires as it passed through this area.
J.P. Morgan Chase profits jumped 52% amid banking turmoil. This is CBS News.
Taxes are due. Have you filed yet? Don't worry. Jackson Hewitt is racking up the assists. They will get you filed or an extension before. The Shaw 101 FM, your fix for progressive talk. From Butler to Windlake. Always streaming at waukradio.com.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Here's what you need to know. Wildfires are raging in Wisconsin for a third straight day. Crews responded to 21 wildfires yesterday, including the 3,000-acre Arcadia Fire. Several people have had to evacuate their homes, but we don't know of anyone getting hurt. There's rain and cooler temperatures in the forecast tomorrow. Fires aren't the only problem in Wisconsin. Flooding on the Wisconsin River means several people in Wausau are having to evacuate their homes. Planners say high water not only poses a danger to people who live in flood zones, but to rescue workers who might be called to pull people out. In sports, the Bucks find out their first-round playoff opponent tonight. It'll either be Miami or Chicago. The Brewers beat San Diego last night 4-3. Eric Lauer starts tonight for Milwaukee. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
Civic Media promised you something big to celebrate our new and still growing network of radio stations. When we announced the one-day $1 million advertising giveaway for Wisconsin businesses, you responded.
Just wanted to echo your sentiments about the advertising. That's really a cool deal and really remarkable.
$1 million of free advertising. Now, if you missed this chance to work with our team, go to civicmedia.us and click on the sponsorship tab. One of our local sales pros will get right back to you. Civicmedia.us and sponsorship.
No Wisconsin resident should ever have to be without heat, water, or power. The Keep Wisconsin Warm Cool Fund and your local energy assistance providers are here to help. For a hand up, apply today and call 1-800-506-5596. That's 800-506-5596. Or visit www.heat.help.
Embroidery Professionals Plus, how may I help you?
Hi, I'm looking to get my business logo put on some things. Is that something that you do?
Absolutely. Do you have items in hand or do you need to order apparel?
Actually, both.
Were you interested in having your logo embroidered or printed?
Actually, both.
Well, you called the right place. To get started,
Embroidery Professionals Plus has custom apparel specialists ready to work with your business, too. Two Wisconsin locations in Deerfield and in Eden. Embroidery Professionals Plus. Apparel you love. Service you crave. Oh, yeah. And home of the Wisconsin Tailgater hoodie.
The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM, Wisconsin's home for rational talk radio. A progressive voice for rural Wisconsin, WAUK 540 AM, always streaming at WAUK Radio.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here. Today on the big program, lots to get to, lots to talk about. Gun Orgy 2023. Yes, the Indiana Convention Center in Indianapolis, Indiana. Gun fetishists, ammo sexuals, AR addicts, mega magazine maniacs, and gunpowder junkies unite. And yes, they are there. And look, all of the GOP attention seekers, all of the people who want to be, you know, something, took the stage on hand to pay homage to the gun. And of course, in front of the unarmed faithful. And that always cracks me up. Always cracks me up that no guns in the gun orgy. Shooting blanks. Nothing there. But I guess I shouldn't be surprised. Now, what I do find interesting on Gun Orgy Day, all the people who come out with their, we've got to be more outrageous, more gun than the last person. And this is how we've gotten to the crazy place where we're at with guns. All of the fetishists and the addicts and the junkies, gotta have it. And it's because we have these policy leaders who want the money. But the right wing of this country has gone way off the flipping end. And they want guns everywhere. In fact, you know, you had Kristi Noem, who, you know, there's a bunch of outrageous stuff in there. But you have Kristi Noem, the governor of South Dakota, who came to Indiana to sign an executive order for South Dakota in Indiana, saying that Indiana would not, or South Dakota would not deal with any corporation, any bank that doesn't support guns. I don't quite know how you're going to enforce that, but it doesn't matter. It's the platitude. It's the hey, look at me. Look what I'm doing for you, gun fetishists. I hope your rod is stiff. Because this is what this is about. Now, she didn't stop just there. Oh, no. Evidently, she has a nearly two-year-old granddaughter. And this nearly two-year-old, nearly, not quite two, already has a shotgun, and she already has a rifle. Isn't it, you know, when I was a kid, this is where, you know, parents would go, what the hell's wrong with you? You know, what is wrong with people who are going to put deadly things in front of their children? No, we want them to stroke it, and they want them to be comforted by it, like the rest of us. It's quite amusing, to be honest. But we're in this weird world, and look, I'm not anti-gun. And I say it all the time, I've got one within arm's reach. I'm not anti-gun. I'm anti where we're going with guns. I mean, you had Mike Pence in his own state, and I love this, being booed by the faithful, because I guess not gun enough, not mega enough. I don't know. In fact, so bad that he had to start his speech off with, "I love you too," which is the right response in that. When everybody is booing you, you got to say something. Words have to be spoken. But Pence, you know, we need to go to the extreme. We need more. We need to be more hardcore. Well, he in his speech said that he's tired of senseless violence, tired of it, and the loss of life that could be prevented if our leaders would support law enforcement, protect our schools, institutionalize the obviously mentally ill, and enact legislation that would ensure that anyone who engages in these heinous acts of mass violence meets their fate in months, not years. Quick little aside, you know, the whole, yeah, we're going to kill them. Most mass shooters, they don't make it out of the event. So we're kind of doing that already, but this did get some applause. Yeah, we're going to kill people. Remember, the pro-life crowd, all in favor of killing people. Now, again, it's not the gun. The gun didn't do all this stuff. It's all these other things. We need to support law enforcement. You know, this is the pro-life party who in Florida, side note, lawmakers there approved a bill that would lower the threshold for the state to use the death penalty. No longer has to be unanimous jury for a death penalty. If one guy says death penalty, we're taking him out back and frying him. Actually, they need 8 of the 12 is what the legislation says. But again, this is the pro-life party. This is the Jesus party. Remember this. Now, Donald Trump, he gave his little spiel, I guess, too. Called for a national concealed carry agreement, reciprocity across state lines. He said, just like your driver's license or your marriage license, your Second Amendment must apply across state lines. And it got me to thinking, you know, most Trumpers I know, now that I'm thinking about it, when they cross state lines, got to empty out the car because you can't take booze across state lines. You can't take cigarettes across state lines in large numbers. No pot, no guns. Eventually, I think they're going to get to, no, take all your vices with you. And I guess maybe that's something that to vote for him for. I don't know. But I'm in this mindset where the Republicans want us to have guns everywhere because there's some belief in whatever patchwork of ideology that they've got that more guns equates to safety. And I think John Stewart hit it right. When do we hit, you know, peak gun? When does, you know, having, you know, what do we got? Like 5 guns for every person in this country now? When do we hit that safety point? And the reality is never. I mean, we're going to have people do bad things with guns because they're easily accessible. I'm expecting at some point there to be vending machines for guns. And I know there's somebody, I probably just gave a Republican an idea. Oh boy, we can put him in the lunchroom at school. Yes, that'll keep schools safe. Because again, we want cops in every school. Okay, if you want cops in every school, where's the funding bill? Where's the funding bill to do that? Again, lots of nice words. We're going to put cops in every corner. Who's going to pay for it? Well, we're going to arm the teachers. Teachers don't want to be armed. They want to be able to have the resources to teach their class. How about we get them books and computers? Oh, no, we can't trust a teacher with a book. No. But a Glock? Sign them right up. And this is the weird thing. And here's my problem. These folks want everyone carrying concealed weapons. And every incident ends up the shots being thrown. And I look at this thing that happened in Florida. I talked about it, I think, about a week ago. Where you had two idiots in a road rage incident throwing shots at each other because somebody, I don't know, threw a cup at the other guy and someone said bad words, made his butt hurt. I don't know what went on, but I know that they ended up shooting at each other and missing each other. Now, I would have been perfectly okay had they hit each other, canceled each other out, we'd be done with both of them. But no. They hit each of the other's kids. I think it was a 5-year-old who got hit in the leg and a 14-year-old that got, you know, shot in the back and had a collapsed lung. You know, those are the people who suffered. These two idiots going, I can't take words. I got to shoot at each other. This is the world we're going to now. Concealed carry across All lines. Don't worry. Everybody. Get the two-year-old with a gun. Thanks, Christy Nome. Thanks for that. And what's interesting to me is, I've talked about this in the past, where we're getting to a point that I shared a story. This has been a while ago. My son and I were heading down the road, returning a van that we rented. Had some moving to do, and we rented this van, and I'm at a stoplight, and this guy who had been tailgating me, losing his mind, comes up to the window and just starts screaming at me. I'm not sure why, but I just reached out the window and I pushed him in the face and pushed him away from the vehicle and drove off. I asked the question back then, would I have, in conservative land, in stand my ground territory, would I have been able to shoot him? Because, you know, I had no idea what the guy's intentions were. I was in fear of my child's life. I could even say I was in fear of my life. I wasn't, but I've been in those situations before where, you know, when I was a younger man, where you're rolling around in the middle of the street, slapping each other around because someone did something stupid. That happens. But we're now in a world where that's never going to happen again. People are not going to slap each other around. People are not going to roll around on the ground and get up and go, boy, that was dumb. Get back in their cars and drive off. No. We're going to shoot each other. And I'm looking at this, the right wing losing their mind over this Daniel Perry in Texas. For those who don't know, Daniel Perry was driving an Uber, or I guess it's Uber, and there was a crowd of Black Lives Matter protesters, and he had written on his Facebook page that, you know, couldn't wait for this. And look, I know a bunch of people who've said, you know, if I'm ever in that position, I'm just going to run them over. And look, there are now laws, thank you, Florida, that if there's a protest going on in front of you, you can run the people over. All you got to do is claim, I was in fear of my life. And you can just run them right over. Because again, we're going to take that cop logic. I'm always afraid of my life, so I've got to shoot first. We'll ask questions later. Well, this is what this Daniel Perry admitted to. Because evidently this Garrett Foster, who was an Air Force Air Force veteran, had an AK-47 at the protest. Because it's Texas. Why not? You've got Perry, who's got a gun in his car, driving into this crowd. Now the response is, well, this Garrett Foster came aggressively to the car with his AK-47. He admitted on tape during the interview it was not pointed at him. Now this is where I've often said, you've got two idiots. There's some heat going on. I may have to shoot you just because. I may have to shoot first because I have to fear that you're going to shoot me first. So now we're going to start dueling in the streets. Now this guy, rightfully so as I see it, was found guilty. He admitted the guy didn't point a gun at him. He just pulled out shot, I guess like five shots. And when they went back and looked at all his social media posts, and again, people, stop writing your hatred down. Because here's the thing. Much like your Miranda rights when you talk to a cop, social media can and most certainly will be used against you in a court of law. So all of the things that Perry put on his websites and on those crazy, you know, 4chans or wherever he was, bit him in the behind. Because he came off as a racist. He came off as someone who would do exactly what he said he would do. And he did it. So this is one of those moments where I have to ask, you know, when do we as a society say, you know what, we've gone too far with this? Look, I'm in favor of people having guns in their home, protecting their homes. If you're really flipped out by it, I'm not quite sure on the concealed carry stuff because it leads to this kind of stuff. And my problem has always been, from the beginning, always been, when two idiots start throwing shots at each other, I know if I'm nearby, they're going to both hit me. And they're going to walk away scot-free. Because I go back to that story of the two guys in Florida, the one who shot the 5-year-old, the one who shot the 14-year-old. Evidently, the guy who shot one of the kids isn't going to be charged with anything. That kid had nothing to do with it. But because it was ruled, well, you know, we ruled that the other person acted in self-defense because I guess there was a cup thrown or something. Instead of just saying, you know what, your responsibility is to get away. And if you're backed into a corner, this is where the stand your ground law stuff is really dangerous. If you don't have to make an effort to get away, then you're going to have more of these shootings. And I got to wonder how many people are thinking like I am. The next time someone raises their voice, next time someone walks at me aggressively, I might have to shoot them. Because I don't know anymore. I'm curious your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. Going to take a quick break. Right back after this. Stick around.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425. Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So on Thursday, Vice President Kamala Harris wrapped up the Biden administration's Invest in America tour. Did that in Washington, D.C. at the I-395 Arlen D. Williams Jr. Memorial Bridge. That's the bridge that connects Northern Virginia and Washington, D.C. I've been on it a million times. Needs help. And she announced a $72 million bit of funding to help repair that bridge. Something like 80, 90,000 people a day cross over that bridge. But she also, while there on Thursday, talking about that bridge, talked about the fact that, $300 million in bipartisan infrastructure bill funding has been allocated to bridges across 8 states and the District of Columbia. They're going to be either repaired or replaced. Now, this was the last stop on the administration's 3-week Invest in America tour, as I said. But it's been reported that, you can't get a lot of information because our media structure just didn't care. But it's been reported that some 20 representatives of the administration were out traveling to more than 50 cities across the country, across 25 states, to talk about the $435 billion in funding that are going to fund 23,000 projects across the country in 4,500 cities. Many of those cities that didn't vote for Biden. Now, again, you look at the fact that our bridges and our infrastructure, our roads and stuff falling down. I guess as of right now, the number is something like 4,600 of the nation's bridges have been or are currently being repaired or replaced. This is enormous. And this is something that, our mainstream media, we've got to talk about things that divide us. This is the stuff that we should be thrilled about, that we're getting good infrastructure in our communities, we're getting good jobs for people in our communities, and all of that positive movement that brings us back into the middle of the road. I often say, the one thing that I when a new road comes in, I'm thrilled because I now know I'm not going to have to align my front end again. But where I live in Pennsylvania, the pothole capital of the U.S., that happens a lot. So the fact that we're doing something on infrastructure is incredibly important to me. And look, it was one of the things that I said from the beginning of the Trump administration. Had Trump's first piece of legislation been, a massive infrastructure bill, had he focused on that stuff, he would have been unbeatable in 2020. Had he focused on bringing jobs and focused on making communities better off, had he done that, had he put aside all the nonsense and the stupidity and all of the shows, because we had a lot of, I'll be honest, he puts on a nice party, especially on taxpayers' money, puts on a really nice party, a really nice show of Infrastructure Week, if you remember, but we didn't do anything. And this is why I'm thrilled to see that Biden is doing this. And it's what we need to be doing. And I had someone again, you know, tell me, well, you know, we can't afford this. And you go, we absolutely can. And we can afford much more if it weren't for how insane our tax code is. You know, as we talked about earlier in the week, just the Bush tax cuts and the Trump tax cuts alone were $10 trillion. Trillion with a T. $10 trillion. We could have easily done everything on the American Society of Civil Engineers wish list. We could have even done fantasy stuff. You could have gone to the engineers and go, you know, if you woke up in the middle of a dream, what would you fund? We would have that kind of money. But sadly, what we're seeing is just a massive redistribution of wealth from working people to the very wealthy through our tax code, through the greedflation we're all suffering from. And I saw, you know, Biden put out an Instagram post saying that, you know, inflation is down from its peak. And I think he said 45% from its peak. No, things are coming down and that's good. But not fast enough. Not fast enough for working people. And I want hearings. I want lots of hearings to go after these corporations. Because as we've been talking about, I think one of the biggest stories that's not being discussed at all is this French economist. This Albert Edwards, who is the global strategist for this Société Générale Bank, saying, look, you know, in all of his years, he's never seen anything like the unprecedented and astonishing levels of corporate greed. And look, we've always had corporate greed, but not like this. And as he said, look, if the super normal profit margins that we see now, if that becomes the norm, he says, look, it's going to inflame social unrest. If working people can't afford to keep a roof over their head, understand 39% of working people are missing a meal to pay their rents or pay their mortgages. In the wealthiest country in the world, that's unacceptable. And as he said, we may be looking at the end of capitalism. And I've been saying this for a while. When a handful control the unimaginable amount of wealth that they have in their hands and are able to do whatever it is that they want to us. When do the pitchforks come out? You know, when do people start pushing back? Now, you could say that's what Trump was, and I agree. Trump, to a degree, was a pushback to our loss of manufacturing jobs, to the fact that communities are broken because those factories abandoned them. I was right there and still am. I still believe those communities need to be dealt with because they're not enough. But the credit I give Biden is there's money going into those places now. And I've had friends who say, you know what, the heck with those red counties, the heck with those red states, screw them. And there's a part of me that goes, you know what, screw them. But if we're going to be the United States, we got to be united. And we got to find those things that bring us together. Jobs, infrastructure, those things bring us together. We've got to stop being allowed to be divided on this stuff. And for me, let's talk tax code. You know, I've said for a long time, we should be cutting taxes at the bottom, raising them at the top. Much like the good socialist president, Dwight David Eisenhower, who invested enormously in infrastructure and had a top marginal tax rate of 92% on individuals making over, I think it's like $1.6 million in today's dollars. Corporations over a certain percentage were paying 56% tax rate. We weren't massively in debt. We were paying for our wars. We were investing in our future. And we didn't have oligarchs who controlled everything we touch. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Quick break, right back.
The Shah 101 FM, Franklin's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
CBS News Brief. The Supreme Court temporarily keeps federal rules for use of the abortion drug mifepristone in place while it considers the case more fully. Stephanie Frame with Planned Parenthood in Florida.
I'm actually heartened by the fact that the Supreme Court took a sensible approach to stay this, and hopefully they'll continue that by throwing this very not good ruling out.
Air National Guardsman Jack Teixeira is charged with violating the Espionage Act in connection with the leaking of military documents online. Attorney General Merrick Garland.
Just his first appearance was this morning. The detention hearing will be held on Wednesday.
After more than 2 feet of rain in parts of South Florida, Mayor Dean Trantelis says in his city of Fort Lauderdale,
a large part of the city has some level of flooding. We have crews surveying to determine the severity of flooding in each neighborhood so we can establish a course of action going forward.
Fort Lauderdale's airport has reopened. CBS News Brief, I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
Bringing some sanity to the airwaves. The Shah 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Here's what you need to know. It's a third straight day of red flag warnings in Wisconsin. Wardens say they responded to 21 wildfires yesterday. The biggest was 3,000 acres in Monroe County. They're calling the Arcadia Fire. Governor Evers declared a state of emergency this week. A judge in Waukesha is increasing the amount of money Darryl Brooks owes his victims to more than $500,000. Prosecutors say there's a chance Brooks could sell the book or movie rights to his story and make money. Brooks is serving 6 life sentences for driving through the Waukesha Christmas parade crowd in 2021. In sports, the Bucks find out their first-round playoff opponent tonight. It'll either be Miami or Chicago. The Brewers beat San Diego last night 4-3. Eric Lauer starts tonight for Milwaukee. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
Don't you deserve a job you love? Civic Media is preserving hometown radio, broadcasting from main streets across Wisconsin, and we're hiring radio advertising sales professionals to join our rapidly growing network of local radio stations. If you have a connection to your community, prior sales experience, and want to earn an outstanding living where you and your hard work is appreciated, you should apply right now. Find more information on our website, civicmedia.us. Click on the Careers tab.
Ready for a journey to Flavortown? Head over to Roadhouse 66 Gas and Grill. They've been serving up the best food in Wrigleyville for 8 years and counting. From their famous smoked chicken wings to their tempura battered cheese curds, every bite is a trip to flavor heaven. And with hospitality that's second to none, you'll feel right at home. So why wait until after the game? Rev up your taste buds and join them at Roadhouse 66 Gas and Grill at 3478 North Clark Street in Chicago. Check out their menu on Facebook.
Milwaukee. You have to check out Mobcraft Beer, the world's first crowdsourced brewery, where they turn your ideas into beer. Stop in their downtown tap room to try flagships, seasonals, limited release crowdsourced brews that you won't find anywhere else, and more. Mobcraft also has a pizza kitchen making craft pies with the freshest ingredients. And enjoy their amazing tap room, featuring over 20 constantly rotating draft lines, indoor and outdoor seating on their dog-friendly patio, and a killer view of the Milwaukee skyline. Mobcraft Beer, located in the heart of Walker's Point in Milwaukee.
For more info, head to mobcraftbeer.com.
Plenty of people start something great in their 40s and 50s. Getting your retirement savings on track is no different. Go to aceyourretirement.org, and in 3 minutes, you'll get personalized tips to help boost your retirement savings. That's aceyourretirement.org. A message from AARP and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So on Monday, the American Federation of Government Employees, AFGE, held a press conference to talk about the Social Security Administration. And look, a lot of what we see in our government has been underfunded and on purpose. The old Grover Norquist, we want to make government so small we can drag it in the bathtub and drown it. And what happens when they do that? When people who tell you they don't believe in government, government can't do anything, and we need to slash and burn, they then act surprised when service isn't where it should be and people are struggling to get the services that they need. This is why the good folks at AFGE are saying, hey, look, we need Congress to act. And that's why I've asked Jessica LaPointe to come talk with us. She's the president of AFGE SSA Council 220. They're the Social Security Administration people. You want to check out their website, AFGEC220.org. Jessica, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, thanks for having me, Rick. I appreciate it.
So walk me through Monday's press conference. What's the ask? What was the point?
So the point of the press conference on Monday was to really bring the focus to the American people on what we're going through at the Social Security Administration internally, and how that is affecting customer service, how we're at a historic attrition crisis within the agency. Our staffing is at a 25-year low, and how it's driving a historic public service crisis to the American people. You know, Social Security is a program that 67 million beneficiaries utilize annually, every month. And it is to keep the nation's most vulnerable people afloat. It's our social safety net. It is something that is vital to this nation and a lifeline to many, many people. And we're in crisis, and we need to sound the alarm on that. And things need to change if we're going to continue to be able to provide these services that Americans have bought in, paid for, depend on, and taxpayers want to see it run efficiently. And we want to talk more about how we can do that.
Yeah, it is the greatest anti-poverty program that I think we've ever come up with in this country, because we took seniors who, you know, years ago were living in poverty. You know, the stories of eating cat food because they didn't have, were abound. We don't see that today. The poverty rate for seniors is much, much lower than it's probably ever been in the history of humanity. So what you guys do is really important. But I think it's interesting to point out, you know, as you said, you have this attrition problem. And I think that's across the board. As people are retiring from your organization, they're retiring from other places. So you're kind of in a burning the candle at both ends. You're losing qualified people. You're losing your best people who are retiring, and good for them. And then as more Americans are retiring, your demand is higher. So why aren't we seeing more urgency coming out of our elected officials?
That's a great question.
Well, because look, if I'm just a dumb truck driver, if I can figure this out, that the more people are retiring, the more demand we're going to have, and you're losing people, there should be some urgency, don't you think? I know there are some who want to destroy it, and you know we need to push it off for another decade or whatever their scheme is. But right now, people need it, and they need the services. They need to be able to pick up the phone and talk to somebody. They need to be able to get what they've earned.
That is correct. The time is now, as they say at AFGE, to fully fund this agency and get us out of the crisis that we're in. I mean, it takes more than funding, right? It takes leadership with a vision. It takes strong leadership with a will to treat their employees with dignity and respect. We often feel like, the union often feels like at the Social Security Administration, that we're dealing with an agency in denial. A denial that we're in an attrition crisis, and employees are leaving about at a rate of about 1,000 a month, or they were just a few months ago. The agency will tell you this is slowing down, but it's not. We hear from the employees every day about how they're just burnt out and they're just fed up. And, you know, this is coming from the employees themselves. We've been surveying, and basically a very high percentage, almost 90%, say that they're going on medication related to work-related stress, that they are leaving the agency because of the mounting caseloads. You know, every time an employee leaves because the pay is not adequate enough to deal with the highly technical nature of the programs and the often difficulties we have with customers and the stress that everybody is feeling because of the logjam of service. Employees are getting burnt out, and every time somebody leaves because of that, a mountain of work is just dumped on the employees that stay. So anytime an employee has an opportunity to leave, they do. And we're seeing our survey's results are showing that over half of employees surveyed are making plans to leave with the agency within the next year. So the time is now to address this crisis. The time is now to raise pay for SSA workers. The union has proposed retention pay incentives to keep employees on, stop the brain drain. We're seeing a lot of seasoned employees, journeymen, journeywomen, employees who are leaving because they just can't handle the stress anymore, and they just want to go anywhere else to work.
And I understand it. Look, Jessica, I understand. In the world that we're in right now, in the post COVID world where people have short fuses and are not nice to each other, I don't know that I want to be on the other end of the phone with half of America. I don't know that I want to have to deal with you know, going through complex issues with people who want to have nothing of it because they don't respect what you do. I wouldn't do it.
Yeah, I mean, employees, Federal Employee Viewpoint Surveys show that employees are drawn to this line of work because they believe that their purpose is serving the common good, that they overwhelmingly 90% believe that. I think it was like 76% align with the mission of the agency. They want to help. They're driven to public service. And yet, when they onboard and they start the process, many of them leave before they're able to get fully trained because it's just not what they thought. Right. The workloads are too much. You're right. The customer base is disgruntled because of the long wait times. It now takes over 7 months to get initial disability decision back. It takes over 35 minutes on average to get your call answered from our 1-800 number. And there are 4.2 million items backlog at our payment center. Wow. Where a customer is associated with that item, right? Whether it's correcting their benefit amount, getting paid, things like that. So there's just customer service is all but halted at this point. Employees are leaving, and we need Congress to do something. We need this agency to modernize their approach to personnel management so we can just get out of this and move forward. I mean, you want to talk about the attacks from Congress just on the program itself. Well, this is like a death by a thousand cuts situation. It's getting, it's sort of imploding from the inside, and then, you know, the attacks on the outside, and we just want solutions at this point.
Right. No, this is where I'm going to be political, so you can turn your ears off. This is where all of the, we need to freeze spending on all government agencies. We need to do something like screw Questor back during the Obama years to cut funding. You know, it's just 2% across mm-hmm. the board for agencies like yours that are already struggling to hold on to qualified people. They know what they're doing. They know they're creating a crisis. They know that they've poison-pilled these agencies. So now you can turn your ears back on. How do we start demanding that you get the funding? I understand you want an additional $2 billion to run the Social Security Administration. I think, you know, getting qualified people, younger people in, people who are willing to stay, I think that's kind of maybe, I don't know, worth the investment. Thoughts?
Yeah, so that's twofold. You unpacked a lot there. So first of all, the American people need to start to demand from their local U.S. congressional leaders that they hold town halls, and we need to get Social Security back into the conversation locally within communities. You know, Social Security keeps people out of poverty. It keeps people out of incarceration. It keeps people purchasing homes. It keeps people from bankruptcy. You know, it feeds and clothes over a million children annually. You know, gives people the financial means to have an education, and it does things like closes the gap on racial inequalities and the gender gap. And in terms of wages, it does a lot. It stabilizes this country. It is vital to this country. And we need to start to have those conversations at a local level, demand that our congressional leaders hold town halls and hold everyone accountable in Washington for what their stance is on Social Security. Do they want it to sunset? Do they believe in it, this 87-year-long success story? Do they want to fully fund it once and for all? You're right. Sequester happened. 10 years of that Budget Control Act, you know, forced us to make really difficult decisions with how we spend the money. That got lifted in October of last year. So we need to start to fully fund this program, and we need to hire leadership. Right? Taxpayers, this is taxpayers now, needs to hire leadership, demand that, you know, the Biden administration appoint, Congress confirm a permanent commissioner that is willing to make these modern personnel decisions, right? Like expand telework where it makes sense, create remote work programs where workloads are fully portable, like at our teleservice centers and our workload support units, so we can start to recruit the best and the brightest workforce from all over the country, right? People that are dedicated to public service, that that want to do this job, and improve our training models. Our training models are sorely inadequate for the complexity of the workloads and for the modern workforce. And we need to start to just infuse resources and time, dedication and energy into this program so it becomes sustainable, right? But we're not going to be able to do that at this point without everybody starting to talk about Social Security, whether it's at, you know, their holiday table, or whether it's, you know, conversations in knitting clubs and holding these town halls and getting it back into the minds of the American people that this is something that we need, that everybody has bought and paid into, and this is something that we want to carry on for our future generations.
Yeah, and something that's good for the country as a whole, to have a safety net to ensure that no one falls through. You listen to the Rick Smith Show here with Jessica LaPointe. She's the president of AFGE, Social Security Administration Council. 220, AFGEC220.org is their website. You know, for me, I when my mother passed when I was 13, I moved in with my grandparents, and it was the disability benefit that helped my grandparents to be able to take me in and pay the enormous grocery bill that came with me. And I still remember that. You know, it's one of those things that there are parts of this that I don't think a lot of people spend enough talking about, and how vital it is for families, not just seniors. And that by destroying the disability benefit or the death benefit or any of that, it's going to be a major hit to our safety net.
You're right, Rick. I mean, I share a similar story, to take it personal for a moment. I mean, you know, I remember it vividly. Worst day of my life, my father died when I was 9 years old, 1989. And the beacon of light in that very dark time for our family was that my mother was just able to call up her local Social Security office, get an appointment, talk with a well-trained, compassionate human being, get those benefits started with relative ease, and not have any hiccups with it throughout the course of my childhood, my three brothers' childhood. And we had a dignified life. I got an education. And now, because of that and because of this program, I'm able to sit here with you today and advocate for strengthening it. And I think probably almost every American has a story like that. That was 35 years ago. Nowadays, the stories are going to be much more negative, unfortunately, because of the logjam of service that has been created by underfunding and this sort of lack of leadership that we've been talking about. And it's sad, and we want to get back to that. We want to get back to this sense of pride in this program, that it's here for us. when we need it, that, you know, the mission of the agency is to deliver every check on time to everybody that needs a check. And we need to really get back to that mission.
There you go. Last question I've got for you. Got an email from someone who asks, you know, why can't we privatize the Social Security Administration and Social Security as a whole? Because this person believes that a private entity would have done this better. I fundamentally push back on that, but I'm curious your thoughts.
No, absolutely not. Privatizing Social Security, America's social safety net, leaving it to the whims of the market to crash like it did in 2008 and how it does, you know, historically, we can't leave our nation's most vulnerable subjected to that. We need to just fully fund the program, stop messing around, stop having delusions of privatization. All that does is makes rich people even richer on the backs of people who are barely scraping by. It makes no sense to me.
I'm with you. Jessica, I appreciate the time. I hope folks will call their representatives early, call them often. This is something that we have to save and continue for future generations. Jessica LaPointe, I appreciate you taking time for us.
Absolutely. Thank you. Have a nice night.
You as well. Remember, check out the website, afgec220.org is the website if you want to find out more information. Gonna take a quick break. Right back with your thoughts. Stick around. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show. We're working people.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. This day in labor history, the year was 1930. That was the day that 114 agricultural laborers in California's Imperial Valley paid a harsh price for joining together to try and improve their working conditions. The Great Depression was worsening the already difficult conditions faced by California farm laborers. The workers had gathered at a hall in El Centro, a city in the valley. The meeting was called together by the cannery and agricultural workers industrial union. The union often faced great opposition because some of its leaders had communist ties. The meeting in Imperial Valley included many Filipino and Mexican workers, along with white and black laborers. One by one, the workers stood up and told their stories of harsh labor performed under the unforgiving California sun. Suddenly, the door of the hall burst open. In poured armed sheriff's deputies and gun-toting thugs hired by the growers. At their head was Sheriff Gillette. Every single worker at the meeting was arrested. They were chained together, loaded into the back of trucks, and transported to the county jail. There, they were charged with violating the Criminal Syndicalism Act. During the first Red Scare of the 20th century, California was one of 20 states to enact laws criminalizing syndicalism. 9 stood trial in front of Superior Court Judge Von Thompson. 3 Mexican workers were ordered deported. The remaining 6 were convicted and sentenced to between 2 and 42 years in prison. They were ordered to serve hard time either at Folsom State Prison or San Quentin. Judge Thompson declared that, for communists, anything less than a life sentence was lenient. In 1933, the final 2 prisoners were released from prison. Organizing California farm workers was a long and difficult campaign that faced great opposition.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
I gotta tell you, to see what's going on with the Social Security Administration, understand it's all by plan. You go back to that sequester back during the Obama years. It was about shrinking the size of these agencies. It was about starving them. It was about doing the Grover Norquist thing. Make government so small, so underfunded that you can drag it in the bathtub and drown it in the bathtub, which means less service for you and me. And that's the game plan. Let's go to the phones. Got David on line 1 from Milwaukee. David, what's on your mind?
Hey, Rick. Thanks for taking my call. I appreciate it.
Anytime. What's up?
Really quickly. So I was listening to your guest, and you know, one of the things that people should remember, and it sounds like she was born in 1980. In 1983, I want to say, or 1984, when Biden was senator, the idea came up with, let's tax Social Security. And we've had that in place ever since. And what I think is really disgusting is the fact that we are essentially retaxing something that people already had taxes taken out for. So it's almost like double dipping. And I personally feel that seniors today, the reason why, and let's be honest, Rick, reason why Florida is booming, reason why Texas is booming, reason why Tennessee is booming is there is no state income tax. Seniors are flocking there because they know they don't have to least worry about having their Social Security tax at a state level. Whereas in California, where my aunt lives, depending on what bracket you're in, you can be taxed all the way up to 14% additional in the state of California.
Yeah, I was against the Social Security tax from the beginning, much like I was against them at that same time period taxing unemployment benefits. Now, I would argue the other side of this, a lot of the money that the federal government puts into those states makes up for the loss in state tax revenue, and we pick up the other side of that.
Well, if you look at this, though, Rick, the one thing I will disagree with you on one part. If you look where most of the jobs are being created, they are actually, Texas has been leading the way for like the last 15, 20 years. Like they've produced almost half of all the jobs in the United States. And now what you're seeing is Florida is becoming a robust, if you look at Miami, that is a international city.
Yep. I've spent a lot of time down there, David. There's a lot of Russian money there.
There's Russian, but there's a lot of everything down there. Yep. But again, my point is, if you look at what's happening is, you know, you have to follow where the money is. And the money flows where you have the least amount of restrictions. People don't realize in New York City, they actually have a rent tax. If you're as a, let's say you have a restaurant and you're renting, and, you know, listen, rents in New York City are this outlandish.
Because people want to be there.
If you're over $20,000 a month, they came up with the idea, hey, let's tax the small business owner 6%, anything over 20%. I mean, over $20,000, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I don't know that so to be... New York City, I don't know that to be accurate. I think that's awful low.
You can look it up.
I will.
Look it up. I swear to God.
But let me ask you this, because I have to go here in a second. So if we're eliminating all the tax revenue that comes in to do the things that we, the people, want, where does the money come from?
Mm-hmm. Well, so there really has to be, if you look at what we're actually doing, where is the money going to right now? And a lot of it is the fact that we're borrowing money that it's being passed on to the next generation. If you go on the national debt clock today,
I know what the debt is, and I would argue that the Trump tax cuts and the Bush tax cuts added about $10 trillion to that, as the Reagan tax cuts of the 80s did as well.
There was no cut in federal spending. The federal spending increased as well with the additional tax cuts.
No, actually, we are actually under. The spending that we were, you know, 20 years ago. Spending has been going down.
I'm not sure if you're spending $6 trillion a year. I'm not sure how we're underspending. I think we're carelessly throwing money around and things, you know, and not getting a full audit. And we're not getting a full, when I say that, and I'm, you know, Milwaukee has this problem. Philadelphia has this problem. If you look at low-income housing and you see how low-income housing is just failing people there currently with mold and mice and everything else that you can think of. There's absolutely no anything. There's no oversight on this.
And that's,
so there's
that's a
literally
problem.
This money that being shoveled out the door.
That's a problem.
Without any oversight.
David, I appreciate the call, man. Thanks so much.
Sure.
Look, you know, there's a lot of this stuff that we have to deal with. Now, where I'm going to disagree with David is, you know, the fact that spending has been coming down as a portion of our GDP. There are so many things that we should be investing in. He's right. There should be oversight in those kind of places. I grew up in a housing project. I know exactly the kind of waste and the kind of mismanagement that happens when you're dealing with poor people because they're always defunded. But I appreciate the call. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. Going to take a quick break right back after this. Stick around and listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. I'm the talk.
You are listening to WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha. Always streaming on the Civic Media app.